Good Tuesday evening. This is Ozarks at Large for May 12th, 2020 on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. Thank you for being with us on a cool spring evening. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead tonight, Fayetteville-based Apple Seeds turned their in-person classes about recipes and nutrition for children into a TV lesson for third graders. And the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra will bring the kitchen to your house with wine to experience their next evening with the maestro. Tomorrow on Morning Edition on KUAF, health experts and governors were warning of shortages of COVID-19 testing swabs months ago, but the federal government waited until late April to ramp up domestic production. Now the White House is playing catch-up on a swab shortage. Is it too late to keep up with demand? On the next Morning Edition from NPR News, tomorrow morning from 5 to 9 on KUAF 91.3. The Arkansas Department of Health is reporting a 121-case increase of COVID-19 over a 24-hour period. At today's press briefing, Governor Asa Hutchinson said 100 cases were community cases. The rest come from correctional facilities. He says 27 of those 100 community cases are in St. Francis County, where a federal corrections facility with confirmed cases is located in Forest City.
Clearly, that's a concern that we first had the outbreak in the prison facility, and the worry is that it would spread to the community, and I want to make sure that everyone there in Forest City knows the importance of sticking with our social guidelines and distancing and wearing of masks for their own protection and protection of others, because we don't want this spike to become larger.
There have been 95 deaths in Arkansas so far because of the virus, and there are 59 people hospitalized in the state because of COVID-19. That's two fewer than midday yesterday. The governor says there were 1,753 tests in Arkansas yesterday, which he says is a good amount, but he wants that number to get bigger. He says tomorrow he'll discuss new initiatives to help the state conduct 60,000 tests this month. Dr. Nate Smith, Arkansas's Secretary of Health, says he is concerned about the 100 new community cases reported in Arkansas.
But I'm even more concerned about the cases that we don't know about. And that's why it's so important that we increase testing, not just in Forest City, but throughout the state. Until we're testing all people who have symptoms and all people who have had contact with known or suspected cases of COVID-19, then I won't be comfortable. I don't think any of us should be comfortable saying, well, we don't have it here or we don't have it there, or it's safe to have a party tonight or it's safe to have this event, you know, at this time. We really need to know who's positive, who's negative, who's been exposed and who's not been exposed.
A concert scheduled to take place at Temple Live in Fort Smith Friday, 3 days before the state's guidelines allow such indoor activities, was again discussed at today's briefing. Governor Hutchinson says the guidelines for each segment of businesses reopening are set for a reason.
Can you imagine what reaction we would have had across Arkansas if we set the date for May 11th to open up restaurants, but a bunch of them just decided to do that on May 5th? You can't just arbitrarily determine when the restrictions are lifted. That is something that is done based upon a public health requirement. In terms of the concert, there will be a cease and desist order that will be issued by the Department of Health directing that concert not take place, which is an official legal order and directive that will go out.
And the governor says he will announce guidelines for bars in Arkansas on May 18th. Not that bars will be able to open on May 18th, just that decisions about the eventual openings of the establishments will be discussed on that date. And the governor says the state will soon get supplies of a new drug.
Arkansas is receiving a quantity of the new drug remdesivir, which is produced by Gilead Science for COVID-19 patients. This is just simply a part of the packaging material that we received today that we're delighted to receive this allocation for Arkansas from the CDC, produced by Gilead Science, and this will be enough for 50 patients is the quantity that we are receiving in Arkansas.
Dr. Smith says the drug shows some promise, but is not a miracle drug. He says it is for people who are severely ill either on a ventilator or with low oxygen levels, and it is not given usually to people with severe kidney or liver disease. He says there are 52 patients in Arkansas who might meet the criteria to receive the drug. He also gave an update on the virus at Cummins Prison. He says now 900 inmates cumulatively have tested positive for the virus there, and 60 members of the Cummins Prison staff. The press briefings are archived and can be viewed at the governor's YouTube page. You can keep up with how COVID-19 is affecting the region and the state at the COVID-19 page at KUAF.com. This is Ozarks at Large. Soon after the pandemic began to have an impact on our lives, we began to see how digital mapping could have an impact on how we considered our new ways of life. News services and public agencies offered maps of how the virus spread and how populations, using cell phone movement, did or did not adopt social distancing protocols. But does all that mapping give us accurate information? And can civil liberties be at stake? Those are some of the subjects Daniel Zway, a distinguished professor of geosciences and the vice chancellor for research and innovation at the University of Arkansas, will discuss when he leads a session of the Pandemic Forum presented by the U of A Honors College. The forum launched yesterday and will feature several different professors, scholars, and medical professionals teaching classes. Daniel Zway's session is tomorrow and will be available to the public afterward. We called him on his cell phone a couple of weeks ago, and he told us the pandemic has coincided with an explosion in digital mapping technology. But he says mapping is a complicated process.
Unless you have some training, otherwise you can do the maps you produce can really mislead the general public rather than helping them understanding what's really going on. So that's has been part of the project I have been working on during the past two decades or so, you know, how, to educate, to involve the general public to do a better job in terms of collecting the most truthful, reliable data and present them in a cartographically correct way for the general public to understand what's going on rather than mislead them.
Is there a particular entity or place that's done a good job of some sort of mapping related to COVID-19?
Yes. So among all the online mapping efforts, there are probably four to five, depending on whom you ask. Mm. Number one that generated a lot of traffic was the one maintained by John Hopkins University. So that website is, they crawl the web collecting lots of data from multiple sources. It started by a conversation by a graduate student in civil engineering with his advisor during coffee break in late January. So they started something pretty small, but they didn't realize it has gone viral, you know, it has become the world's top, like a mapping source. So for, I think, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, you know, their website, because of the demand, it was so high that their server can no longer handle the traffic, so the server crashed. I think they got that problem fixed, so now it's back live again. So that's one website I have been monitoring. I think the New York Times also has a website that is quite good. WHO has its own website, and National Science Foundation gave like $10 million to University of Virginia, a biocomplexity institute. So they have a dashboard. So these are the four that are frequently used by the general public and also decision makers. CDC also has its own website. If you want more technically oriented information, you know, the CDC probably, for researchers, that's probably a more reliable source to use.
It's interesting because you were talking about the public being unable to better filter what is reliable mapping and what is not that might mislead. And it sounds much like taking in any kind of news. The reputable, the one, the organizations, the outlets with pretty good reputations, New York Times, CDC, National Science Foundation, Johns Hopkins mm-hmm. University, they're the ones that you mentioned. So part of this, I guess, filtering the good from the bad is just considering the sources?
Yes. And also, as I mentioned earlier, mapping is a long technical process that involves multiple steps. So there's a data collection is absolutely the first step, you know, to have always have truthful, reliable data. But even though sometimes you have accurate data, but depending on how you have processed the data and how you have you know, visualized the data, you know, using the same accurate data set, you can make a variety of different maps down the road, and they may tell different stories. That's something I have tried my best to explain to the public. Whenever they are reading a map, they need to put some grain of salt, because depending on how the data have been massaged and how they have been presented, so the same accurate, the same data sets can be presented in front of the general public in dramatically different ways, but thus telling different stories.
And then, of course, there's always the questions. There's mapping that explains how something might be working. But you get into that gray area, and for different people, that starting point is at different locations. But when is mapping or surveillance in the public interest, and when does it begin to infringe on my civil liberties? I'm sure those questions have come up during the last several weeks for you and your colleagues.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a major concern that actually I'm going to cover. Again, this concern is not new. You know, after 9/11, you know, the similar issues were raised, you know, in terms of balancing our drive to maintain a security versus how to balance civil liberty and concerns to maintain people's privacy. So in the current pandemic, it has been, you know, the many governments all over the world have made some major changes to have a better tracing and a tracking effort for how the virus has been spread across the globe. But at the same time, they inadvertently have to encroach in some of the, you know, the private areas that citizens are concerned about. Like in European, in the most EU countries, they used to have a pretty high standard. Mm-hmm. But right now, including UK and Germany, you know, they have all given, like, their Ministry of Health, Public Health, you know, a broad range of authority to collect information in order to fight this COVID-19 virus. But although they claim they are all these measures are temporary, but again, they have raised concerns by citizens and various privacy groups all over the world.
You mentioned that you're also part of a book project. I'm wondering, is there research that you and your colleagues at the University of Arkansas have been doing during the past several weeks during the pandemic that are related?
Yes. So, you know, for those, that's what my team and I have been doing during the past several weeks. So if you're interested in what's going on in terms of COVID-19 related research projects, you can visit research.uark.edu. So that we have COVID-19 collaboration hub. It's listed. It'll give you an overview of all the interdisciplinary research projects related to COVID-19. And also, we, in order for us, for this campus to better respond to the external funding opportunities, we have grouped all the ongoing projects into seven topic areas, and that you can, you know, see who are the, you know, group leaders of each topic. If you're interested in joining any of the group, you're more than welcome to, you know, this. So, so we are keep updating the website, and we have also listed the funding opportunities. So after those initial seven groups were formed last week, I also got a chance to talk to two additional groups. One is related to the potential disruption for food supply chain due to COVID-19. Another group is interested in studying the environment, climate implications of a COVID-19 lockdown. So looks like in the near future, we may add two additional groups in addition to the seven we initially formed.
Daniel Zway is a distinguished professor of geosciences and the vice chancellor for research and innovation at the University of Arkansas. He'll lead a session of the U of A Honors College's forum called Pandemic Tomorrow. The Honors College will provide free public access to the forum that runs through May 22nd by posting a recording of each class online. Just go to honorscollege.uark.edu/pandemic. This is Ozarks at Large. The Inverse Performance Art Festival is scheduled to return to Northwest Arkansas in November. Cynthia Post Hunt is co-founder of Inverse and the programmer of theater and dance at the Momentary. While the Bentonville-based contemporary arts venue is closed, the Momentary and Inverse have been organizing a social media challenge called the Inverse Challenge.
The challenge really was a reaction to this current moment. You know, COVID-19 has been pretty difficult to navigate for a lot of individuals. And we were thinking about the way folks at home right now are possibly looking to mix up their routine.
Every Monday during the five-week challenge, a new prompt by a different artist is shared on the Momentary's Instagram. It's then up to participants to create their own 30-second video in response to that week's artist-led prompt. During the first 3 weeks of the challenge, prompts have included completing a simple task without using your hands or feet, recording a video that considers your current state, and creating a video that considers how to use an orchestra, sound-based Morse code, or communication device.
These prompts were really created as and meant to be a launching point, a way for that really breeds experimentation, you know, just like asking everyone to look at things differently and really just to play.
Post Hunt says it's been really fun to watch people's videos. She says they've received great response from national and local artists, but the challenge is open to anyone.
We see this as an opportunity for families to get involved in a project together. You don't have to think of yourself as creative. It's really a way to experiment or to look at something differently. And, you know, the stakes are pretty low, just 30 seconds. And it can just be like a thought or a gesture. And it doesn't have to be something that's like really, really processed and thought through.
She says, in some sense, there are no rules or boundaries when it comes to performance art.
Performance art is a rebellious form. So it's really reacting to all the other forms and ideologies that exist and kind of rebels against each of those. So it's a little bit of all of them and a little bit of none of them at the same time. So that's why I think that there's a lot of freedom in the form. And so when I think of someone engaging with one of these prompts, I think that there's a lot of freedom. You don't have to be an artist. You don't have to know anything about performance. You don't have to feel comfortable singing or dancing or acting or any of those more traditional senses that we think of as performance.
The Inverse Challenge continues through May 24th. When posting video to your Instagram account, use the hashtag MoInverseChallenge. That's MoInverse. Hashtag MoInverseChallenge. More information available at themomentary.org. In addition to the inverse challenge, the Momentary and Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art are launching their social connecting campaign this week. Crystal Bridges Chief Education Officer Marissa Reyes says their goal is to bring art into the lives of those who are especially isolated during the coronavirus pandemic.
These would include patients who are in hospitals, as well as senior citizens living in assisted living facilities. And what the campaign entails is we've invited 9 local artists to draw and paint in response to the word together. The idea is, you know, to really solicit from these artists images that would bring comfort and joy to people who are lonely and isolated.
The artwork will be shared in 2 ways. First, Reyes says there's the postcard campaign where each artist has created line drawing versions of their pieces that will be printed on postcards.
And we are distributing these postcards to the public, to our staff, to volunteers and members, with the invitation that whoever's receiving those postcards can color in the beautiful line drawings and write inspirational messages on the back. And then we're asking these people to send the postcards back to the museum. And then what we're doing is taking these postcards along with some art and creativity kits and distributing them to local hospitals and senior living facilities.
She says the artists have also created 4x8-foot murals of their line drawings that will be displayed outside the windows of the hospitals and senior living facilities that are also receiving postcards.
So the museum may be closed, but our commitment to art and creativity doesn't stop. And so we really wanted to do something for our community that really reflects, you know, some of the things that we feel we do particularly well, which is, you know, working with local artists, spreading joy and creativity and engaging with our public.
The 9 local artists involved in the campaign are Kenny Arnanando, Stacy Bates, Kenya Christian, Tram Colwyn, Leanna Fisher, Octavio Logo, Matt Miller, Hannah Newsom, and Alan Rodriguez. Reyes say they were all asked to visually interpret the meaning of the word together.
We wanted to give them a simple enough prompt, but one that they could really interpret in a different, in a myriad of ways. Some of these artists we have worked with through our public programs in the past, but some artists have been recommended to us and have we've met through this process.
The murals will go on display in the coming weeks, and the postcards will be available on select days at the Crystal Bridges building entrance starting tomorrow. Reyes says postcards can also be picked up tomorrow at the Rogers and Fayetteville libraries between noon and 2 p.m.
There's no lack of recipients for these postcards. We're also encouraging neighborhood groups or community groups, if they so wanted to host a socially safe and socially distant postcard writing party, to write to the museum, and we're happy to send them bulk postcards in bulk.
You can find a link to all the information about the social connecting campaign at OzarksAtLarge.com. And in the second half of our show, we conclude our reporting from Michael Hiblin with our partner station KUAR in Little Rock about how the Arkansas PBS Alternative Methods of Instruction for Arkansas School Children being received. And Fayetteville-based Apple Seeds is ready to share its kitchen classroom devoted to nutrition and cooking with third graders tomorrow morning via Arkansas PBS. This is Ozarks at Large. The musicians and staff of the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra thrive on live performances, but recently, well, you know. But the APO and its maestro, Stephen Bias, are adopting novel ways to make sure Friday's An Evening with the Maestro, complete with food and wine, can still take place. Patrons who buy tickets will have the 5-course meal created by Chef Michael Robert Shaw from Persephone on Wheels delivered, plus wines paired with the meal selected by the maestro to your door. And there will be music provided by vocalist Elizabeth Jilka and pianist Matt Nelson. The songs, also chosen specifically to accompany the meal and wine, were recorded yesterday at Haxton Road Studios in Bentonville. We reached Jason Miller, APO's executive director, yesterday, right after the recording session had finished. He says his team is preparing to make those Friday deliveries.
We will actually be delivering 5 courses with wine pairings to your door on Friday, May 15th, this Friday. And the chef Michael Robert Shaw from Persephone on Wheels has put together an amazing menu that's also available on our website if you would like to check it out before purchasing tickets. And there'll be a little bit of work on your end whenever you get home to make sure that each entree is absolutely perfect. Like, for instance, he's making fresh pasta for you. And so it will obviously be much better if you boil your own water and cook that, you know, for 2 minutes. And then he's making the first course is a hot ramp dip that all you need to do is warm up in the oven. So he's going to make it super simple for you, and you're going to just enjoy five amazing courses. Stephen and I are actually going to come on via Zoom at 6:30 to do our introductions, talk about the dinner, talk about the music and the wine. And then we're going to give you links to all of the music selections and the order that you go in, and then you can enjoy at your own pace. You can enjoy a date night with your significant other, or maybe you're comfortable inviting another couple over and having a small get together and being able to enjoy this and supporting your local orchestra at the same time.
All right, so you recorded the performance, but you and the maestro will come on Zoom live?
Yes, so that will be the only live component. We'll be able to come, but he's actually in Pasadena, California, and I'm here in Bentonville, Arkansas. And we'll join you live at the beginning because we really want to see everybody and thank everyone for participating in this. And then just be able to explain why the maestro chose certain songs with each wine. And the chef wants to go over a little more detail about the dinner. And also thank you for participating. And then we're going to let you go at your own pace so you can make it an all-nighter, or you can be done in 2 hours if you need to.
Oh, and are there children's meals available as well?
Yes, for the first time ever, we're offering a child's meal add-on. It's a pasta dish and a dessert, and it's just $10. So we understand that you're home with kids, and we want to be able to feed them as well. And we also understand that, you know, this is no replacement for a live event where we all get together, but we're so thankful for the response so far. People are really excited about having something to look forward to and be able to support their local nonprofit. And we look forward to being able to do this all in person again. But in the meantime, this is something that we want to be able to offer to our community as a thank you, and we're having a lot of fun putting it all together.
Do you think you've learned anything through all of this that may serve you back when we can all be in the same room together?
For sure. Orchestras you don't tend to change a whole lot. Mm. You know, they tend to remain the same for hundreds of years. And this is really propelling us into the future. And to be able to partner with someone like Neil at Haxton Road Studios and to be able to put music together for online content, this is really just forcing us to think differently and to come up with new creative ways to be able to share our music with people everywhere. But anyone that has experienced live orchestral music, a live Broadway musical, or live concert knows that it's never the same. You know, you don't have that same feeling. You don't get the goosebumps, you know, when you hear it online or at home, but it's better than nothing at all. And again, having somebody like Haxton Road Studios to give you that almost in your living room, you feel, we're so grateful, you know, to have that. Much better than recording on our iPhones.
Also, you mentioned that you'll be delivering. What if you end up with people, I don't know, from Avoca to West, I mean, all over the place who are participating? That's going to be some work.
So we're very willing to deliver within around an 18-mile radius of Rogers. But, you know, if you're in Silent Springs and you want to partake, I'll make sure you get a meal.
You'll work with people.
Yes, exactly.
Jason Miller is the executive director of the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra. More information about the APO can be found at arphil.org. Tickets and information about An Evening with the Maestro can be found at arphil.org as well as stubbs.net. We talked by phone yesterday. This is Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support comes from Clubhouse Fitness, helping Arkansas become a healthiest state through personal training, over 70 classes weekly, and access to outdoor activities, with two locations in Fayetteville, plus one in Little Rock. Club HAUSFitness.com for more.
This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansas school children are spending another week not in their school buildings. Instruction at home from teachers via digital connections, from parents and siblings, and from Arkansas PBS continues in place of in-person classrooms. Tomorrow, Fayetteville-based Appleseed's in-person Cooking in the Schools program will be in front of third graders as part of Arkansas PBS's Alternative Methods of Instruction. We recently called Mary Thompson, the executive director at Appleseed's, to ask her about the project and to ask how the connection with Arkansas PBS developed.
To make our experiences unique to what our teaching firm can offer. So this was a little bit of a challenge to convert that into a video format, but we did do that with just airing footage of the farm as well as airing the cooking class that's normally done in person. It's normally really engaging with the kids doing all the cooking themselves in person. So we adapted it to teach students how to do this at home, and still were able to bring in the nutritional education content that we deliver in person with engaging activities to guide students in doing this on their own.
This Cooking in Schools program, the idea is, I think, to take it from start to finish, from reading the recipes to measuring the amounts of flour or whatever. Will that be part of the video presentation as well?
It will be. So we will take them virtually through the farm to harvest the ingredients and talk about the nutritional content and take them into our teaching kitchen to measure out the ingredients, to learn how to follow that recipe with us as we make the recipe, and also really highlight that nutrition label and teach them what all those numbers and words mean on the back and how they can use that to make food choices.
When you're doing it, for the Arkansas PBS presentation, did you pick a certain recipe that you thought would work better than others?
Yes, we have a super green mango smoothie that we have tested with many, many students, and they all love it. And it is a really simple recipe for kids to make at home with only needing a blender. So we thought that would be a really great one to share across the state with the rest of students in Arkansas.
So this is exciting. Do you think this is an exploration into future sort of video production and a new way to distribute what you can do?
We are definitely looking into it. We've definitely had the opportunity to learn more and more about it, and we've started a YouTube channel with short cooking classes as well as doing this with PBS. So we're really looking into the options of the future and to see how else we can continue to reach students beyond Northwest Arkansas.
Do you have any partners in this? I mean, how are you making this happen?
We are so lucky. This program has been supported by the Walmart Foundation and the Clorox Company Foundation while we were delivering it in schools. And they're both really flexible in adapting it to this online content that can be shared with more students across the state.
What did you learn doing it this way?
We have learned so much in the past month and a half. Really a lot about how the program changes once it becomes a video. It's recreating something else and really learning about all the opportunity that's involved in converting material online and really making it accessible to so many more students. It's definitely a different way than how we go about it, but it's been a great learning opportunity for making our material and content available to so many more people.
And at the beginning of this conversation, you also mentioned that something else Appleseed's is doing is trying to get food to students. I mean, not just a video, but actual food to actual students. How's that working?
Yes, that's been a really successful project so far. So we have our teaching farm where we usually grow food and teach students about it in person, and they go home with the food. So we've switched that to grow more food and deliver it through the school's distribution systems that are set up for the students that really need that access to food during these times. So we've been able to contribute over 1,000 pounds of fresh food, along with the recipes to show the students what they can do with it once they have it. And then we also have links to YouTube channels to teach them how to make short recipes on their own. So we're really building out what we can do to provide as much access to fresh fruits and vegetables to those students that we usually work with.
Finally, what kind of conversations have you and your team and your colleagues had, knowing that we don't quite know what's ahead in 2 months or 4 months or 6 months? Have you had conversations about what that means for Apple Seeds and how you work?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we started out just planning for the spring and what we plan to do through the spring to get through. And now we're talking about all the different scenarios. So we are currently planning for a couple of different scenarios in which we would be delivering virtual field trips in the fall and continuing with the models that we've built out if necessary. So we'll have the option to do either in-person or virtual content for almost every program that we deliver.
You can find out more at appleseedsnwa.org. I think you're on Facebook and Instagram as well.
That's right.
And YouTube.
And YouTube now. Appleseeds Inc. is the name for all three of those.
Congratulations on this new endeavor. Look forward to see where it leads.
All right. Thank you.
Mary Thompson is the executive director of Appleseeds in Fayetteville. She talked to us yesterday by phone. The Cooking in the Classroom segment, geared toward third graders, but we can all watch, will be seen tomorrow morning at 9:30 on Arkansas PBS. We're several weeks in to the Arkansas PBS Alternative Methods of Instruction program. It's designed to fill the void while school buildings are closed because of the pandemic. Educators are watching closely to evaluate the effectiveness. Yesterday on Ozarks at Large, our colleague Michael Hiblin, with our partner station KUAR in Little Rock, reported on AMI and how it's been working. Today, he asks educators involved about the process nearly 2 months in.
Hello, dear, sweet, beautiful, brilliant students of Arkansas. I'm Stacey McAdoo, and I am truly honored to have another opportunity to spend some more time with all of you 6th, 7th, and 8th graders for Arkansas AMI.
Stacey McAdoo is one of five teachers who host AMI segments, mixing locally produced material with carefully selected content from PBS.
There are a lot of farms in Arkansas. The natural state farms a little bit of everything. What I love about living so close to so many farms is that I never forget where my food comes from.
For 17 years, McAdoo has taught at Little Rock Central High School, but last year was named Arkansas's Teacher of the Year. That brought her out of the classroom for what she calls a year of service, visiting other schools and providing professional development for teachers. She and four other Arkansas Teachers of the Year were asked to host segments, which are broadcast by Arkansas PBS and can be streamed online. McAdoo says the material is chosen by the TV station in consultation with the Arkansas Department of Education.
It is then up to me to kind of take what they have written, and I try to add myself to it, if that makes any sense. So, for instance, one of my common phrases that I say in my classroom is I always greet my students by saying, "Hello, dear, sweet, beautiful, brilliant student." So I felt like it was very important for me to start each of my segments with my signature or standard phrase, because I wanted the segments to feel as warm and inviting and as close to allowing the students or the viewers to see who I am normally as possible. So even though I am not delivering any instruction, I wanted them to be able to see and feel my love for all of them, whoever they are, because as a teacher, I love students. I love young people. And I hope that comes across when not just me, but when all of us are on there.
And she's glad the lessons are being broadcast in addition to being online.
I knew that in my community with my students, there were a lot of my students who would not have access to internet or devices at home. I also knew that prior to this year, we utilized public access channels for our school board meetings to advertise them. And we also did some other things on there. So I immediately thought about using public access channel to help give, offer, show instruction to students. Now, what exactly that programming was going to look like, I had no idea.
But as she was having those thoughts when Arkansas school buildings were being shut down because of the outbreak, Arkansas PBS had approached the Department of Education to see if it was interested in partnering. It has 6 broadcast signals around Arkansas, providing reliable coverage to about 3/4 of the state. Some in higher education who are not involved in the Alternative Methods of Instruction program are watching the process carefully. Dr. Victoria Grove Scott is dean of the University of Central Arkansas's College of Education, which trains future teachers.
Fortunately, Arkansas had the AMI in place prior to the pandemic, because we're much farther ahead than a lot of states that didn't have anything in place. And so we had this system in place where we had packets that were built up that we planned to send home, and virtual learning environments for snow days and inclement weather and those kinds of situations. But there are other states that have nothing in place. And so those children and teachers have been struggling. People I know all across the United States and other states, they haven't even had contact with their students because they didn't have a mailing list and packets weren't put together and there was no approved virtual platform. So we're sitting really good in that situation.
But Dr. Grove Scott says there are limitations to the AMI program.
We do have this point where a lot of the AMI is not teaching a new skill. We're just reinforcing and we're reviewing content that was previously taught, because it's very, very difficult to teach a new skill, especially a complex skill, virtually. And for the younger children, that is particularly difficult. So if you're introducing long division, that's hard to do through a virtual format. And even in the high school level, if you're teaching advanced chemistry, then you've got things like labs that you can't do virtually. And that causes difficulty for the children and for the teachers to be able to reliably offer that content in a virtual format. So those are some concerns that we have, and especially concerns about children that have disabilities. So children with special needs have a lot of time, a lot of difficulty, and need a lot of one-on-one contact. And so virtual learning environments are definitely not the best for our younger children and for our children with disabilities.
Another collegiate official, not involved, but observing Arkansas AMI, is Dr. Kimberly Crosby, Director of Teacher Education at Lyon College in Batesville. She agrees there are unavoidable limitations compared to the traditional classroom setting.
There's no way to replace a well-trained teacher in terms of providing education to students. And I think that the teachers are feeling it as well as the students. I follow some teaching social media accounts, and teachers are working double hard to try to provide quality learning experiences for their students, and also scheduling Zoom meetings and trying to find creative ways to interact with their students socially as well as academically.
School buildings have been closed through the end of the year. When they open, which officials hope will be on schedule in August, Crosby says the disruption to students' academic progress will be apparent.
I think it's going to be unavoidable that there will be some remediation needed, largely because of the differing capacity for being able to access online learning. You know, we have groups of students, whether by geography or socioeconomic status, who just can't access the materials in the same way that other students can. And, you know, the home situations vary so much that I think there'll definitely be a need for some remediation practices when school goes back.
How will students be evaluated?
That's going to be a case-by-case basis. And students are going to have to potentially be diagnosed when they return to school and to just try to determine what the learning loss is. You know, students experience a certain amount of learning loss just over a summer break. And so this is, I would imagine, going to exacerbate that learning loss since the period of time is so long.
Crosby hopes that after this pandemic, teachers will be more appreciated as they were in the past. In Little Rock, I'm Michael Heplin.
And more about Arkansas PBS on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large. A new Arkansas PBS series explores lesser-known trails and waterways.
In Arkansas, you have such a variety of outdoor activities that you can do, and high adventure, and so many different, you know, sections of the state. Ozarks, you've got the Ouachitas, you've got, you know, the Delta and the Grand Prairie.
That's tomorrow on Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Springdale, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to this Tuesday night edition of Ozarks included Antoinette Grajeda, who gave us news, sound, and information about the Inverse Challenge, and Zuzanna Sitek, who gave us news, sound, and information about the Crystal Bridges and Momentary Social Connecting Project. Our show, mastered tonight from his home studio in downtown Fayetteville by Timothy Dennis. We know that right now things are different for you. Your schedule, your children's schedule, the entire routine is different. And being able to hear the stories, interviews, and information about where you live featured on Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. isn't always easy. Schedules don't always align. So we've made our show available as a free podcast through services like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, Apple TV, and many other places where podcasts are hosted. You can also tell your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large. And we can also have daily highlights of the show delivered right to your email inbox. We have a free Ozarks at Large daily newsletter. Each story has a brief synopsis along with a link that allows you to click through and hear the story. Stories about health, economics, arts, music, and more that we present every day right here. You can subscribe right now for free by going to kuaf.com/newsletter. Most Tuesdays in the past, before this all started, we heard from the Militant Grammarian. We have new Militant Grammarian sessions that were recorded at a social distance on my front porch. We'll have one of those on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large. All right, next on 91.3 KUAF, the national conversation about the latest regarding COVID-19 and the economic crisis continues. A live hour produced by All Things Considered and NPR. It's the latest information plus answers to your questions. It's tonight and every weeknight at 8 o'clock, right after the evening edition of Ozarks at Large. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back with you tomorrow at noon. I'm Kyle Kellums. Be safe. Talk to you soon.